over your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year, we turning fear into love. And the love's in the air, I love doing this cause nothing compares. Nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, know through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, know through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco. Lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown. Mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones. Letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Super happy to be back. And, you know, alive and well on this Monday, June 5th. This year has been flying. Ever since, I guess, November of last year when, you know, Donald Trump won and, you know, everyone's been in disbelief at what the hell is going on in the United States. People around the world are looking at us like, what the shit did you guys do? Well, I don't know. Maybe with Trump, we were finally being honest with ourselves, right? Because Trump is the most American president we've had in a long time. You know, honesty prevailed. Not honest as in, you know, telling the truth and, you know, being factual, but Trump is an honest representation of many people in the United States. You know, they don't regard facts very highly, very reactionary. They like to blame other people for their problems. Violence is, you know, the answer to most of our issues here. You know, Trump is a representation of the United States. I hate to say it, but, you know, I used to say, man, when I first started in this program, when me and DB got into this like 4 years ago, I was definitely naive. And I was like, you know what, you know, I can't believe that these politicians and these, you know, corporations are taking advantage of the innocent American people. That is definitely partially the case, but we don't want to forget also that the government is in some, one way or another, a mirror image of the public. The crap that Donald Trump spewed out of his mouth during the election cycle, who, you know, many were like, oh, I can't believe he, you know, started his campaign on some anti-Mexican, you know, rhetoric, and I can't believe he's talking about banning Muslims. I can't believe he's talking about committing war crimes. A lot of Americans were like, hell yeah, that's right. We gotta do that shit. We gotta blow him up. Like, people were like, yeah, dude, yeah. And I was, you know, a lot of other people like us here on the radio show were like, whoa, this guy is so crazy. Like, this is never gonna happen. Like, no way. Like, this is not going to happen. Hillary Clinton's going to win. As much as we hate Hillary Clinton, she's going to win because Trump is just too damn crazy. Well, you know, the fact of the matter, I'm not going to say unfortunately, because I can't say that Hillary Clinton would have been better. You know, by all means, she probably would have been worse, because at least she wouldn't have the opposition that Trump has. But you know, it happened, and it's maybe not, it shouldn't have been such a surprise, because a lot of people resonated with that stuff that Trump said. And not everybody lives in this bubble, I guess, where I live here in San Diego, California, where we've got like this great, awesome economy, and we all live among immigrants, and it's pretty peaceful, and people aren't, you know, it's not like, you know, extremely, extremely bad and stuff. I mean, I guess I live in a bubble where, you know, I guess people that live in the Rust Belt and people that live in the Midwest don't live in that bubble. They live in an area where it's very segregated. They live in an area that's been hollowed out economically. They live in an area that's been forgotten about by all these politicians. And so people are pissed off, and they're willing to give someone like Donald Trump a chance. Now, of course, you know, if you look at the numbers, the people out here did not give Donald Trump a chance. They're like, fuck that guy. He's crazy. We like our Mexican friends and family here. We don't want to deport them. We like Muslims here. We don't want to ban them. But the rest of the country maybe not doesn't think that way. And so we're dealing with this brand new reality that is much more of an honest reality than it was under Obama, where we pretended like, oh, we have Obama and we love peace and we're not an empire anymore. We if we're going to overthrow countries, it's for their own good. Not unlike with George Bush, who was a bad guy and did Iraq and you know, did 9/11 and all other shit. Like, you know, Bush was like, oh yeah, he's such a bad guy. And then Obama was like, oh, Obama, man, he brought peace to the world. Like, a lot of people that voted for Obama still think that he ended all these wars. They still think that he ended the Iraq war. They still think that the Afghanistan war isn't going on anymore, but it actually is. I think the big difference here is that Trump is it's more out in the open. Like, this is what we are. That's what we've been. We've been the shithead, meathead, bumbling baboon rolling throughout the world doing whatever the hell we want. You know, you saw Donald Trump the other day push the Prime Minister of Montenegro out of the way for that photo op. That's America. That's who we are. Obama was just putting a veneer over top of it, like, oh, we got this cool, attractive, young, hip face on top of this brutal, nasty empire that pushes whoever the hell it wants out of the way. Trump is a more honest representation of what we really are. And if you don't like Trump, if you think he's ugly, think the shit that he's done and said is stupid, and his reaction to the terror attacks going on in England, his reaction is, see, this is why we have to ban Muslims. I told you. And he's like going to war with the mayor of London on Twitter. If you think that's ugly, that's what we've been since 9/11. That's what we've been doing. We've been demonizing and dehumanizing Muslim people for the acts of a handful who, according to the official story, are the same guys that Trump just cut a huge arms deal with. So what the shit are we doing? Like, none of it makes any sense. Anyway, long enough monologue. Let's get the show started. We've got my longtime co-host on the show tonight, DB Schwartz. What's up, dude? How you doing tonight?
Doing good, Nick. Pretty busy, so sorry I was a little late calling in, but
hey,
what you said was right, though, like, especially up here and especially in the South where the economy is just completely gutted. It's created a lot of problems, and, you know, if we have an economic collapse here, we don't have, like, a unifying culture to fall back on like other countries within their own borders do, so I can easily see us splitting into three or four separate, you know, territories. I mean, maybe the military will keep it all together, but I think they're going to allow it to break. It's easier to control that way. And I think you're right, man. It's a completely different mindset up here. And it's completely different on the East Coast where I just got back from. I haven't been to the South in a while, so I have no idea. I guess the SM can attribute to that more. But yeah, man, we're four different countries. Just travel to the East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, and the South. You'll see it.
Yeah, dude, and you know what? I've been to Birmingham, Alabama, stayed with S.M. Gibson, who hosts our shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I liked it. I liked Birmingham. I wouldn't want to live there, but it was a nice place, and I met some really good people and had some great food and, you know, felt pretty welcomed. And there's nothing wrong with people in different areas of the country at all. Nothing wrong with being a conservative in the Deep South, there's nothing wrong with being a Yankee liberal from Boston or New York or being from the Rust Belt.
There's nothing wrong in saying this 250-year experiment's been a failure as well, and that we can peacefully coexist and not need to have a civil war.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with thinking differently than other people. Now, when we run into issues here, and DB, this kind of goes to your point, we run into issues when we start saying, well, the people from, you know, the South are going to tell everyone else how to live for the next 4 years, and they're going to dictate the laws for the next 4 years, and they're going to dictate the foreign policy for the next 4 years. Whereas the people over here on the West Coast may say, well, that doesn't make sense. We don't want to roll back the, you know, legalization of gay marriage. We don't want to crack down on marijuana. We don't want to, maybe bomb the Syrian government. Maybe that's something we don't want to do. And so we run into these big time tensions when we have a system of government where just one handful of people can decide an entire election, and then they get to dictate their policies down to the rest of us. And this is where we run into the fundamental problems with this type of government. I don't know what you want to call it, democratic republic or, you know, Republican form of government, democracy. I guess there's all different types of forms of democracy and stuff. But democracy all suffers from the same underlying problem, is that the people who lose the election, in some way or another, they lose their rights or they lose their liberties or they get more money taken out of their check, or something is done that they don't believe in. And so then there winds up being anger or angst, or, you know, when it manifests itself as violence. Just yesterday, heartbreaking to watch live. We had one of our journalists, Sean Bradley, on over in Portland to document this, you know, there was the quote unquote free speech rally, which in my opinion is like, okay, you guys are rallying to suck Donald Trump's, you know what?
You're going into your safe little free speech zone, like good little plebs.
Like, when was the last time that a president had, you know, when a president's in power and they have rallies that are like in favor of that president? That is just
70 years ago, Nick.
The bootlicking shit to do. Like, I would never, you would never see me going out there saying, yeah, I love my president. Like if I'm going to protest a president, it's going to be, I'm protesting against something he's doing. If the president is doing his job, good job, buddy. You're doing what we pay you to do. We don't need to go out celebrating it. Like, that's
he's not taking a paycheck, Nick.
Yeah. You are supposed to earn your paycheck.
He's not taking one. So he's not accountable.
So, like, that, first of all, that's what bugs me, dude. Like, if you're going to go out there and have a pro president rally, like, you're a bootlicker. But on the flip side, you know, our guy was out there just documenting it down the middle of the road. He's not confronting anybody, just showing what was going on. And a handful of anti-fa dumb fucks went and beat him up, dude. They jumped our fucking journalist. And that is bullshit, first of all, and it's
what a bunch of dumbasses.
Ridiculous, dude. And so both sides of this equation, both the alt-right and, you know, their lady punching heroes, which, you know, we all remember the guy that punched the girl with the dreadlocks in Berkeley, and they all celebrated that guy as some type of hero. And then these anti-fa people that beat up our journalists for no fucking reason, they're both cowards, and they're both playing into the hands of, you know, the establishment, because by doing stuff like that, you demonize yourself, you demonize your movement. When the alt-right goes around punching out girls and the alt-left goes around jumping journalists and shit, like, it's just stupid, and it hurts yourself, and it plays right into the hands of the establishment, divides the people further. If you haven't realized that this is what they want by now, then you haven't realized shit, because this is what they want. They want the powers that be want Antifa and the alt-right. They want them in the streets pummeling each other over the head. Because first of all, you guys beat each other up, you get sent to jail, you injure each other. Second of all, you just continue the polarization of the, you know, the political atmosphere in the United States, which means you neutralize yourselves. The last thing the establishment wants is for these two groups to come together and realize, oh shit, well, we both actually kind of want the same things. And I know Jake has been talking about this a lot lately. I wish he was on the show tonight. I think he's busy doing something. But I have an article that I wrote last year in June. Hold on, I'm trying to pull it up. I'm going to pull it up in a second here. But anyway, these people are literally playing right into the hands of what the government wants you to be doing. They want you beating each other instead of beating them. And so I wrote this article. The title of it is "Trump is the Greatest Gift to the Establishment in Modern American Politics." I wrote this on June 3rd, 2016, obviously before the election took place. And you know, there's several, I mean, it's a long analytical article that nobody fucking read when I wrote it, and I was pissed off about it, but, it popped up, you know, on Facebook, it'll show you the, your memories and stuff. And so this popped up a couple of days ago on June 3rd, and I was like, damn, I looked at it again. I was like, holy shit, I was spot on here. So I wrote this a year ago, and I'm just going to quote the last paragraph, from the article, and it goes, quote, "Vote all you want, but as long as the conversation is centered around who can beat Trump or who can stop Hillary, the country is in for a long, hard disappointment by this time next year when we realize, again, politicians make promises that are almost never kept. Even worse than do-nothing politicians getting elected, a culture of fear is incubating where whites and non-whites glare at each other in distrust or hate simply because they've been captured by the political rhetoric of the status quo that thrives on division. Trump's divisive, hate-inspiring campaign is setting the stage for decades of safety for the political establishment. The last thing the oligarchs want is unity among a disgruntled population that might just set their gaze on them instead of each other." So, like, I wrote this a year ago, and just yesterday it, like, was perfectly plain what was going on here. And Donald Trump is the biggest gift to the establishment that they could have ever asked for.
And everything they're testing in the UK right now, they're going to attempt to use it here. So if we are dumb enough to ever give our Second Amendment up, they could just do the exact same thing here, and it would be so much worse. So at least the UK has a bit of civility in it.
Yeah, and I guess we're going to go into that next. I just wanted to get that out there. Oh yeah, so our guy that got jumped by these Antifa cowards, and I'm not condemning all Antifa at all. I'm not condemning anti-fascism, obviously. And I think black bloc tactics could be used in a way that is effective. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. I'm just saying the cowards that jumped our journalist can go to hell. Screw them. You know. So we covered it on Sunday. We had an article up, got a lot of views. But if you guys want to donate to Sean, because also they ripped open his backpack and fucked up like $1,000 worth of video equipment that he had. You can go to paypal.me/antimedia. And you could donate there, and the funds that we receive, we're going to be sending over to Sean to help cover his medical costs because he got beat up pretty badly, dude. Like, his tooth is loose. Hopefully he doesn't lose his tooth. His face was all beat up, dude. Like, they beat him up pretty badly. You know, all he was doing was walking around filming. That's all he was doing. He was filming both sides. He filmed the Donald Trump side. He went over to film the other side, and that's where it all happened. And so
Somebody from the local Antifa group to tell us if they were infiltrated with agitators, because
yeah, that's the other thing, dude. Like, I looked at these guys and they all look like fucking cops. Like, they look like cops, and so it may have been cops that beat him up. I don't know, but it doesn't
matter. I mean, why would they randomly beat him up?
Exactly, dude. Like, they were, you know, it was a provocation. Like, they were trying to start some shit. So, you know, by all means, it may have been an infiltration. You know what I mean?
Well, if they're listening or if anybody knows of anybody in that community, I mean, if we can get some kind of a representative to tell us what the hell is going on, because if they were infiltrated, they need a clean house, and if they weren't, then fuck those guys.
For all we know, it was Jake out there in Portland jumping Sean. That's why I didn't show up for the radio tonight. Jake, if you're listening, it better not have been you, dude.
Yeah, man. I heard Jake's been on that bent recently. He's just firebombing.
Nah, I know it wasn't Jake. The UK, man, these terror attacks, two in a row, Manchester and now, I guess, the London Bridge. You know,
nothing at the benefit concert though.
I don't know where to start on this. I mean, DB, I mean, what's your take?
Well, dude, nothing at the benefit concert. It went off without a hitch. Nothing while she was on stage. Not a lot of CCTV, at least that they've released. A lot of really messed up propagandish type things on Periscope. I mean, the demonization effect in full swing. I mean, honestly, the people that are not even religious, they just are cursory Muslims, are going to get caught up in what's going to be this first wave of crackdown. And this is like a test, man. They're going to persecute and demonize one segment. It's worked in the past where they've said these people are an existential threat and we can't possibly know who's safe. We've got to kind of vet them all. So they're going to probably try to intern them or do something weird. I mean, maybe they'll be the first people to try to chip in the UK, but everything that's going on right now just looks so scripted. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I saw a former British intelligence head was calling for internment camps in England. So, you know, that's obviously a really, really bad idea.
And, you know, of course, that'll come with total property and fund confiscation. That would be a huge boon to the economy and everyone else would cheer about it.
Yeah. And then Jake wrote an article that we published today about some of the problem reaction solution stuff going on. So Theresa May, the Conservative Prime Minister of the UK, is now calling for an even greater crackdown on British internet services. And, you know, Britain already has basically the most Orwellian Big Brother surveillance apparatus in the Western world. I mean, what they do to their own citizens is even worse than what the NSA does here. A lot worse, actually. They've got so many cameras everywhere, and they are like trying to ban encryption. And so, you know, the prime ministers are already on this problem reaction solution stuff where it's like, okay, guys, I hope you're ready to give up all your internet freedom so that we can keep you safe.
And Nick, what I want to stress to anybody listening that doesn't know is they do not have a constitution. People have been bitching online. The UK would never do that. Yes, they would. They created tort law. Everything's a contract. Everything's a business proposition. And when you're a country that really never had a lot of resources to begin with and now has even less and now doesn't control much of an empire, I mean, kind of second banana to us in the whole scheme of things, I could see where they would need a scapegoat to continue what they've been doing. Otherwise, there probably is going to be an organic revolt soon.
Yeah. And so... hold on, because we got a bunch of articles on this. Let me pull up a couple of these. I should have been prepared ahead of time here. But. So the first point I want to stress here is that they already have the most Orwellian police state in the Western world, right? Like, they already spy on all of their people. They already have cracked down on encryption. They're already got all this massive surveillance stuff going on.
And you know what? It doesn't work, Nick, because everybody that's ever been caught's always said, man, we don't use any electronic ways of communication. We go to old school. And then they're so lazy now. I mean, the cops don't even have guns. That's what it tells you about how they value the safety. Because, yeah, sure, cops in this country kill a lot of people. We know that. But could you imagine a cop here without a gun? It's a pointless position to have somebody attempt to police a population when they don't have a force multiplier really at all. And when you look at these British cops, they are just as out of shape as any American cop is, and they're getting whooped up every time they try to get in there and actually detain somebody.
Yeah, dude. Exactly, man. And, you know, here's the thing. And this is a point that Kerry made in an article we wrote, published on May 25th, called "Dear UK, Your Government Already Let the Terrorists Win." And basically, dude, is the big point here, I think, is that despite all of this stuff, they can't stop these attacks from happening. And there's two angles to this. First of all is you know, the surveillance apparatus, mass surveillance. And this is something Snowden has repeatedly said. When you conduct mass surveillance, it's basically you might as well not be conducting it because you have so much data that you can't ingest it. You can't analyze it all. And so therefore, a lot of problematic things are just end up slipping through because since you're looking at everything, you're also looking at nothing. And
they want these things to slip through. Every time they do, they tighten a loose end for our ability to do anything that what we believe is coming, which is going to be when they control all the AI, they control all the robotics, and really at that point, what do we mount? Yes. What kind of resistance would we have?
So yeah, dude, like that's the other thing too here. And so the guy from Manchester, right, Abed Salman Abedi. He was a young dude, but he was known to have become radicalized. In fact, people from within the Muslim community reported him to the authority and said, "Hey, we think this guy may be getting ready to do something bad." So they were aware of this guy. It turns out now that some more digging has been done, the UK actually facilitated this kid's travel to Libya, knowing that he was radicalized and probably going to become even more radicalized, because they wanted him and many other Libyan immigrants that were living in the UK to go over there and fight Gaddafi. They created a human pipeline sending radical people down to Libya to go fight. In one way or another, UK intelligence, in a way, kind of groomed this guy. Knew who he was, let him go down there and do what he did. Who knows what he did in Libya? Then they let him come back. And then everyone's acting surprised when he goes out and starts killing people. Like, oh, yeah, well, maybe that makes sense. Maybe that makes sense. We sent him down to Libya to go die, fight and die, came back radicalized, and then he went, you know, and died, fought and died. Not exactly a big surprise. And this second guy, let's pull up the Mirror article here from Britain. God, if they didn't have so many goddamn ads on their page, I could actually see what they're trying to write here. So apparently the latest attacker was also, he'd already been investigated by the MI5, which is like the British intelligence services, in 2015. So I guess similarly to like the, you know, Boston bombers and stuff, like these guys had already been questioned and had probably already been in custody, had maybe already been arrested, and then they let them go. Why? Like, why is it now we're seeing time after time, the last two in Britain and then more recently in the U.S., I mean, how many of these guys that have done these terror attacks, how many of them had already been in contact with the intelligence services, FBI or, you know, local police and stuff? So
I think what we're seeing, Nick, is like a circling of the wagons for the British, well, I guess you call it a Mero British Empire now, where Brexit's kind of pulling them out and pulling them totally into our sphere. There's no way they're going to let Theresa May lose. She'll win by like a point. And that's what a lot of these things going on have me thinking. The timing is just too convenient. And, you know, it's because when you look at what we've been doing, what we tried to do, what the powers that be saw an opportunity to do in World War II was to kind of come in and be the savior, right? But it didn't work out that way because we used atomic bombs. And once we did that, everybody realized we were kind of crazy. So we had to continue this doctrine of just total militarization, because otherwise we would experience blowback of an atomic level. Because once you hit somebody yourself, why shouldn't other people hit you, you know, to teach you a lesson? So the fact we've never been hit says a lot. And it continued on into what we've always referred to as the confessions of an economic hitman scenario, where we knew, like, militarily we couldn't control anything, so we phased into this economic warfare. And that's what we're in now. Like, people don't understand. There is World War III going on now. It's just not a conventional bombing cities war. It doesn't have to be. It's not going to be. It's going to be monetary collapses, grid collapses, things go boom in the night. I mean, special ops stuff. The only way it'll ever go back to a World War II scenario would be like in a complete and total free fall of the economy worldwide, where people felt they could take advantage of it because they had a better military than a neighbor or something like that, and they just tried to swoop in. And maybe we'll see that. Maybe that's what they're getting ready for here. I have no idea. Why do we need a wall on the southern border if we're not going to go to war?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, dude. And, you know, it does go back to what's going on in Britain, because they got this big election coming up for prime minister. And, of course, they've got their two parties, which from the outside looking in, you would say, okay, they got their conservatives, which are kind of more like Republican. And then they have Labour, which is kind of more like Democrat. But there's a caveat. The guy leading Labour is a guy named Jeremy Corbyn, and I look at him as kind of a left libertarian progressive by America. Like, if he was in the U.S., that's what I would call him. And it's kind of like a hybrid between Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul. And he's the guy he's the guy running for the Labour candidacy. And obviously, looking from the outside in, it's like, okay, Jeremy Corbyn is like the better choice. Just like if we were looking back and saying, well, would you rather have Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton? Obviously, even if you don't like Bernie Sanders, it's like, yeah, Bernie Sanders is much better than Hillary Clinton, right? Just as, like, you know, if I were to look at the Republican, you know, field before the election, I would say, oh yeah, Rand Paul is much better than Donald Trump. Anyway, that being said, Jeremy Corbyn versus Theresa May, this is an election that's coming up very soon. And this is going to have obvious ramifications across the entire world. And Jeremy Corbyn is actually taking these terror attacks and saying, you know what? We need to stop invading countries in the Middle East, and these terror attacks would probably stop. So, like, Jeremy Corbyn is saying a lot of the same stuff that we're saying, whereas Theresa May is more along the lines of, like, neoconservative, like, okay, well, these terrorists are bad people, so we need to start bombing Syria. And that's exactly what she said after, you know, the Manchester attack. But the guy was from Libya, right? The guy was from Libya. And so they're like, oh, well, this bad terrorist, and he's ISIS takes credit, so we're going to go bomb Syria. I think Jeremy Corbyn is saying, no, that's maybe not a good idea. I think there is very interesting election playing out there in England. I have a quote from Corbyn. Quote, I have spent my political life working for peace and human rights and to bring an end to conflict and devastating wars. That will almost always mean talking to people you profoundly disagree with. That's what conflict resolution is all about. But do not doubt my determination to take whatever action is necessary to keep our country safe and protect our people on the streets, in our towns and cities, and our borders. So despite being, you know, a non-interventionist or whatever, he is kind of still playing up that same old keep you safe rhetoric or whatever. But the guy's got a track record of being not being an imperialist. And in fact, he's actually pretty critical of Israel and what they've done with the Palestinians and stuff as well. And that's very rare in British politics. So, you know, this, like you said, though, DB, what did you mean, though, by they won't let Theresa May lose. You don't think they'd let you don't think they'd let Jeremy Corbyn win or what?
No, I mean, because they've already made their decision when Brexit squeaked through, and like I said, I believe there's multiple empires in the world, and ours is a Western one. Ours is probably closer to Babylonia and Rome and Londinium than anything else, and or at least the people that initially immigrated here and the founding fathers that had a conservative insurgency to save their way of life, which included slavery, which a lot of it's really ironic when you think about it, Nick, because it's like the empire is collapsing under its own weight because it went and tried to colonize the whole world once through, well, trade and gunboat diplomacy, another through like multiple world wars that haven't stopped even to this day. And now they're trying to do it through an economic technological level. And the truth of the matter is like people that live in poverty, even abject poverty in other countries, still resist our economic colonialism, even if it improves their quality of life, because they don't want to give up their culture. And that's something that I guess our rulers will never learn and they'll never accept, is that there are other cultures and people around the world that think totally differently for generations and eons. And I mean, America's a perfect example of how cultures can get along, but sometimes certain ones never intertwine, period. And it's normal, and that's just part of humanity. And part of our growth maybe is this clash of civilizations every once in a while. But yes. I think we're pulling back, Nick. I think we're in retreat.
Yeah, there's been some very interesting developments. So first, let's look at Europe. And you know, Trump's recent tour of Europe and the comments made by Angela Merkel afterward, there's a clear rift there between Germany and the United States that you wouldn't really see. I mean, I guess I'm not that good on Cold War politics and stuff. I didn't study up. I'm mostly better at the pre-Cold War stuff. But I don't remember a time in recent history where including when it was like, you know, West Germany and stuff, when the German government had clear differences with the United States. This is pretty new. This is pretty new where, you know, Merkel was saying, look, we can't rely on the U.S. anymore to be our, you know, to take care of us. We have to be more self-reliant. I honestly look at it as a good thing because she's right. And I don't agree with Angela Merkel on many things, but obviously your countries are better off being self-reliant than being, you know, basically a proxy of the United States. If you can take care of yourself, do it. Don't let us tell you what to do, because we're obviously messing some stuff up because we can't even get it right here at home. So I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, it does signal some bigger kind of schisms in the grand scheme of NATO and the allies that we think we have and stuff. Like, I'm not sure how much longer the allegiances are going to hold up. Maybe because I think they're starting to feel, I think a lot of these countries are starting to feel our weakness. And I guess Trump is kind of a symptom of that weakness, where people are really insecure and really struggling to figure out what the hell has happened. So, you know, Trump got elected out of weakness. And so I think a lot of these countries over there in Europe, especially the stronger ones like Germany, I don't know exactly where the UK stands. I guess we're going to find out more about that after this election. But I definitely feel like some of our stronger allies are starting to say, okay, well, we're not sure how much longer you guys are going to be in charge and how soon it'll be until we're taking orders from China. And so shortly after this whole schism with Trump and Merkel, it was only like a day or two later that there were headlines coming out about China cutting more trade deals with Germany. So there's this shift going on here that, you know, we've been talking about for a while. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Is when does China supplant the United States as the most powerful entity, or, you know, the most powerful state? Of course, the United States, We may be we may have officially lost our edge economically, but militarily we're still leaps and bounds ahead. But it's only a matter of time after China surpasses us economically before they also pass us militarily. And so I guess the big question here is, you know, not a matter of if the U.S. loses its dominance as the sole superpower, but when does it become number two below China? You know, and so I think Europe or at least Germany is seeing the writing on the wall, and they're like, okay, well, at the very least, we're going to be more neutral with the United States and with China. And so that's what I was seeing with Merkel kind of backing away and saying, look, we can't rely on the United States. We got to look inward. We got to rely on ourselves. We got to work with other people. It that may be the main signal saying, hey, look, the U.S., you guys have passed your peak, dude. We passed our peak. And so these are interesting times that people need to just knowing that this stuff is going on puts you on a higher playing field than the majority of the public. And so that just by knowing what's happening, I think it gives us a better advantage here, and gives us a better opportunity to just not only survive, but, you know, thrive throughout this process. You know, it's going to be, these are some changing times. We're going to be.
Well, Nick, have you ever heard of Dune, and you've heard of the saying that fear is the mind killer? Well, part of like understanding the process of what's going on right now, which is essentially that this web of information that was released to the public to track them actually became kind of uncontrollable, and it exposed and released too much info. And now these people are like exposed to other power groups. And that's what people don't understand. It's not so much that the American people are going to like rise up and overthrow anything, because God forbid they like would miss the NBA finals or something, you know, but other groups around the world now know all of the dirty business in detail. They know exactly who these people are, what they're doing, and where their bank accounts are, and also where their hideaways are and their getaways are. So it's put them in a pickle, in a really bad position, where I believe, like I said, they're retracting now. They're giving up assets kind of like as piecemeal, you know, kind of gifts to some of these other empires to prevent a big gigantic war we're not prepped for. But we're prepping, and you can see we are, and it's an act of desperation. I mean, I'm seeing the normally military branches that don't really advertise, like National Guard and Coast Guard, they're starting to get a lot of play. That $60 billion that Trump added on to the national defense budget, I would guess at least a few billion of that it's going into marketing, and they're ramping it up. They want more meat for the meat grinder, and they know it's going to be this time, I mean, unbelievably brutal because of the new tech.
Yeah, dude. And look, Germany and the U.S. isn't the only allegiance shifting here. And I wanted to float this idea out there after this, but Saudi Arabia is now cutting ties with Qatar, which, of course, has been a longtime partner over there, ideologically and otherwise.
There's something about Hillary transferring alleged $1.8 billion to Qatar that set off the other countries around there against them when Trump won. So they put all their eggs in the losing basket, and this is the result for them.
Yeah, and so there's just a crazy changing of allegiances there in the Saudi sphere, the Saudi sphere of influence.
Number four military in the world now is Saudi Arabia. Everybody should research that. There's a Global Firepower website, and they've bumped up because of this huge $175 billion arms deal.
Crazy, dude. Craziness. And so according to Saudi media, they're saying that the reason that they're splitting up with their allegiance with Qatar is that Qatar is friendly to terrorism because it's friendly towards Iran. But let's cut through this bullshit rhetoric. And, you know, we all know Saudi Arabia is the one funding a lot of the terrorism, if not most of it. And so when they're accusing someone of supporting terrorism, that means they're just disagreeing with them on foreign policy.
But they're also about to say that it was some rogue princes and that they're reeling in their accounting and not giving people so much money to be able to have all these institutions the crown wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard of that yet, but I mean, it definitely seems like what's happening is people are losing faith, and at the very least, Qatar is losing faith in the Saudi ability to win any kind of war because they can't even win in Yemen. Yemen is the poorest country that's just literally right on the border of Saudi Arabia. It's a very, very small country. I think it's smaller than California. In fact, I think it's much smaller than California. And it's right on the border. And Saudi Arabia is doing everything in its power to beat the Houthi rebels, which are in Yemen. And they can't. You're talking about the fourth largest military in the world can't beat a ragtag band of just rebels that are, under finance, under arms, underfed, malnutrition, and they're still kicking the Saudi Arabians' ass.
And the worst part about it is that because of the actions of this horrible war where you've got people and cities being, you know, basically bombed with the same veracity of places over in the Middle East by us and Russia. I mean, the Saudi Arabian Air Force is no joke, and they're hitting positions that have no hope at all of defense and civilian pops. And it's creating a famine. I just saw an article that was like every 10 minutes a kid dies because they haven't been eating for – you know, a month or two. I mean, people are holding on that long. And, you know, if there's one thing Americans could do is to get behind a relief program, even if it's airdrops. We have a massive Air Force. We could just airdrop food in there and make a huge difference. I'm not saying that we would or that we could, but if public pressure was applied for at least food to get in there, I mean, it could save thousands. A kid every 10 minutes, dude, just from no food. And it takes forever to die from no food. It's a horrible way to go.
Terrible, dude. Terrible. And the thing is not only are we selling Saudi Arabia the arms to do all this crap, and so that's already on us. But even worse than that, we're supporting this effort in many ways. I mean, they're giving Saudi Arabia surveillance. They're giving them intelligence. They're basically doing everything but dropping the bombs for them. And that's not to say that we're not also dropping bombs in Yemen, because we are. We're flying drones, and we have a quote-unquote anti-terror campaign against quote-unquote Al-Qaeda over there. So we are bombing in Yemen. We're just not bombing the Houthi rebels. We're supposedly just bombing Al-Qaeda. And, you know, we all know that that's sketchy at best. The honesty of that campaign and the truthfulness of it is probably – we're probably not bombing Al-Qaeda. We're probably bombing the Houthi rebels, and they're just telling us that they're bombing Al-Qaeda. And not only that, but Trump, as soon as he got into office – you remember he authorized that raid that went in and they killed some, like, little girl that was a U.S. citizen?
And like, yeah, but that was like left in his lap. So I have to give equal. I mean, for let's be honest, like because of how long things are planned out, even like a year out, I bet there's still Obama operations on the table that are probably going to be greenlit by Trump. He doesn't care. It doesn't matter what face the puppet wears. It's like you said at the beginning of the show. They just don't care anymore. They don't care to hide it. What are we going to do about it? What are we really going to do about it? Like,
The thing is we're in the minority here, man. Like, I know us, and I know the people that listen to our show. I know a lot of our, you know, regular listeners. We're empathetic people who give a shit about other people's lives, regardless of their race or their religion and the color of their skin or whatever. Like, a life is a life. People are people. Like, they shouldn't be dying. They shouldn't be starving if it can be prevented. But the majority of Americans, unfortunately, either are apathetic to it or even worse, they're like, fuck it, dude. Like, you know what? Turn the Middle East to glass. Why aren't we nuking Iraq yet? Like, people because say that shit. They mean it.
You have to give civilians a chance to get out. And surprise, surprise, we grow a lot of food and we do a lot of bombing. So a lot of people claim, you know, political asylum, and we bring them in because it's sort of a moral duty. And if people don't want to see millions of immigrants spilling in here, then we have to change our foreign policy. But by the way, because we have millions of immigrants spilling in, we have a positive growth for our population, and our economy is still growing despite all of the incompetent morons that run government and run big business and screw over the American worker. The innovation that's partially spurred by all of our immigration helps stave off what's going on in the rest of the world. I mean, like I said, diversity has been a strength and a weakness. There's cracks forming, but we could split up along ideologies and still protect each other and still have an intertwined economy, just have different rules for different areas. It would be all good. I would be so for it, man. I mean, I think most people under 40, 45 are pretty much seeing the inevitability of that.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you made a bunch of good points there. But, you know, I guess the point that I was making is that, you know, our foreign policy is really messed up, and the few of us realize it, maybe more than we'll admit. But at the same time, there's just as many people who are like, screw it, just kill them all. They don't care. In fact, some woman that claims to be an activist, I won't even say her name, alt-right activist, was over in Italy actively trying to prevent refugee ships or boats. You know, these guys are floating boats off of Libya, and like some of these boats, they're trying to row out. They're trying to row a boat from Libya to Italy. That's no small feat, obviously. She was out there trying to block the boats from landing in Italy. And we all hear the stories of the refugee boats capsizing and 50 people drown, 110 people drown, 200 people drown. And people are out there talking about blocking the boats from landing. And keep in mind, these refugees, many, many, many of them are leaving from Libya. A lot of them are Libyan. A lot of them are from Mali. You guys aren't familiar with what's been happening. Mali is basically still a colony of France. France just went over there and was bombing the shit out of the place, toppling their government. The United States and UK were just over there in Libya taking out Gaddafi. And all of a sudden people want to give a shit about, oh, now we care because now there's refugees. Like, where the fuck were you when they were bombing these countries? Where were you when they were creating the problem? Now you want to complain when the symptom is starting to show itself.
Yep, and it's come home to roost too, man, because if you go or look in Paris, there's no-go zones. There's entire populations that are like basically against the government, and a lot of that is, again, like that clash of cultures, but it's foreign policy. It's like if the roles were reversed, we'd be doing our patriotic duty the same as they are in a way, because you have to fight in the way you can. If you're overwhelming, if it's an overwhelming amount of people with huge tech advantage on you, I mean, there's really only a few ways you can defend or at least try to defend yourself and not just get steamrolled. And I mean, they're putting up a fight in the only way they really can, which is taking the fight to us. Now, if people don't want to get hit by blowback and become collateral damage, we have to put pressure to make changes in really only one sector, Nick. It's always just going to be about energy. I mean, every war is just about this fake-ass need for energy when it could be free, and it's been free forever. So if people would make a Tesla coil and their one person in the neighborhood got free power and taught all their neighbors to do it, what are they going to do, arrest everyone? I mean, then we don't buy gas, we don't buy power. I mean, things could change rapidly, but these techs have got to be utilized. And again, if anybody out there is listening that is aware of people like this, tell them to not just release patents, because we're not engineers. We don't know what to do with a freaking blueprint. Create something, sell it, get it out there somehow, and people will use it, and we'll change the world like one house at a time, because that's really the only way we're going to do it. unless actually people think we're going to take a bunch of AR-15s and go topple some stuff.
Yeah. So, first of all, if we went and we're like, you know what, dude, we're going to have a revolution. We're going to march down on Washington, D.C. We're going to take out these corrupt fuckheads. Guess what? Most of the people with the guns that are going to be out there fighting are going to be people on the alt-right. And guess what? They may go into D.C. and take out Congress and arrest all these politicians and, I don't know, maybe cut their heads off or something. And then guess what? They're going to put someone like Donald Trump in charge of everything. No check and balance, just Donald Trump. That's it. And so that's like, okay, that sounds like a really, really bad idea. Like, I used to think, like, you know what, dude, we need a fucking revolution in this country, but we don't. Because ideologically, philosophically, we're infants. We're infants. Donald Trump is a representation of the United States. That is the general consensus right now. That's us. Maybe not you and me, but that, generally speaking, that's us. And if we had a revolution right now, guess what? All of the checks and balances and shit, like the few things that the founding fathers actually got right, those go out the window and we only keep the bad stuff. So forget about that. Forget about that. I got one word for you, and DB, you just brought it up, and this is the one word that we need. Decentralization of everything. Decentralization. I know we touched on this last Wednesday about Derek and, cryptocurrencies and all that stuff. But decentralization of our energy, of our government, of our defense, of our industries, of our food, of our water, all that stuff. That's the only way. That's the only way that I can see right now, barring some kind of crazy technological, you know, invention that fixes all this shit, you know, or robots taking over or aliens landing or some shit. Barring all that, the only philosophical thing that we can do right now that would be effective is just decentralization. And the cool thing about that is you could start right now. You could start checking out of the banking system right now, and you could start moving all your money into Bitcoin. You can start banking using cryptocurrencies instead of keeping your money in Bank of America. You can start growing your own food and start getting your electricity, if not from your own house, but maybe try to set it up in your own community where you have a community solar farm or something like that. Like, decentralizing basically everything in our lives that we rely on. And the internet, Facebook, like social media, relying on one provider like Facebook is terrible. It's stupid. It sucks. Because they get to do whatever the fuck they want. They get to censor whoever they want. They get to take away money from whoever they want. Don't let anybody make money if they don't want them to. Plus, they sell all your data, and they don't give a shit about privacy, and they work with the government and all that other stuff too. But we got to decentralize everything. Everything. That is the only philosophical thing that we need to embrace right now. And it doesn't even have to be partisan politics stuff. Like, you don't have to say, well, I'm a conservative decentralizationist. It's like, just decentralize. You don't have to be a politician. You don't have to be political about it. Like, who wouldn't want to rely on food that is grown closer to their house? Who wouldn't want to rely on power growing off, getting generated off their rooftop? Like, who wouldn't want that? It doesn't have to be political. And, you know, more and more as we deal in these political conversations, the more I realize politics are just just a waste of time. And the activism we should be embracing is not political activism. It's solution and economic-based activism. And decentralization is the just underlying component there that is going to make all of this stuff – is going to just make the world a much better place. It can't be manipulated by a handful of people. And so much like I told you, I'm doing this for dreams we pursue, but call it a reality cause there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening.